Venture X from Capital One is the travel card for people always asking,
where next?
You earn 10x miles on hotels and rental cars and 5x miles on flights booked through Capital One Travel and 2x miles on everything else you buy with Venture X. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges. The Venture X card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit OsbourneMediaHouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
The following episode may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Today's episode is brought to you by the Atlanta Vision Institute. The Atlanta Vision Institute was the first in Georgia to use SMILE, the most advanced laser eye surgery procedure. This procedure is done with a high-tech precision laser. It's simple, takes about 6 to 8 minutes in its entirety. It's an easy recovery, requiring minimal post-op care. Most people are amazed at how effortless it is. You're going to experience substantially improved vision just a few hours after this surgery. Dr. Ashraf was on staff at Johns Hopkins University. He's board certified, and he's completed over 40,000 LASIK procedures. So go check out the Atlanta Vision Institute. Check this out. You can mention my name and get 20% off a consultation. To learn more, go to atlanta2020.com/Matt. That's me, M-A-T-T. atlanta2020.com/Matt. Go check out the Atlanta Vision Institute at atlanta2020.com. I am your host, Matt B. Davis. So happy to be back with you this week, bringing you another great show. Now, quick reminders. I got two things in the notes or in the details or in the show description I'd like you to check out. One is the live show coming September 20th. That's right, Atlanta Podcast live with special guests. David Perdue will be there. Trey Humphreys will be there. We're working on some more special guests. Listen to their episodes. Learn about those guys before we get there. Just a lot of fun stuff. Also, the best of Creative Loafing. Man, would it mean a lot if you would vote for me there. Go ahead and check out the links on the proverbial show description. All right, enough of that. Let's get to today's program. On today's program, Brian Fanzo. Now, if you pay attention to social media stuff and marketing stuff, you've probably heard of this guy. If you don't, let me explain a little. So first of all, I got to back up and say, the reason I know who he is because I dip my toe in that world. So like if you look at the things that I pay attention to, one is the obstacle racing stuff. Many of you know that's my day gig, my number one gig. Secondly is stuff going on in Atlanta. So these are things that are sort of always in my purview, right? Who could possibly sponsor? Who could I get for content? Who could I interview? Could I meet this person? Like these are the things I look at in general when I'm searching the web. It's kind of where my brain goes. A couple years ago, I started paying attention to the social world, and I was probably introduced through Gary Vee, who many of you listen to and many of my guests listen to, Gary Vaynerchuk. You can look him up if you don't know who he is. And so through that, I just started kind of dabbling more in social. I actually found my buddy Chris Strub. Chris Strub, who I can say is a friend. We've met a couple times. Chris, I've interviewed you twice. And we've aired neither one, by the way, I just realized. And I'll talk to you personally about why that hasn't happened. But through Chris, I met this guy, Brian Fanzo. Now, again, this is like, what does all have to do with Atlanta? Well, as the show says, famous, Atlanta famous, infamous, and those I find interesting, I will occasionally give you somebody that's not necessarily Atlanta, but has either traveled through Atlanta or is from Atlanta, or is in Atlanta while, you know, on a trip of some kind. Chris and Brian were here for something called the Social Shakeup here in Atlanta back in May. And I got to be honest, this one's a little on the selfish side. I'm in this world, and I hear here's a guy who makes a living doing essentially what I'm doing, right? Or what I want to do. I mean, he's on the speaker circuit, and that's where he makes, I know, a lot of his living. But in the content creation world, which I do through the obstacle stuff and through here, bringing people cool conversations, cool video content, cool anything that I think is fun and brings value. So I thought I'd ask him a bunch of questions as he's making a living doing that and has for a while. So that's what you're going to get. You're going to get me and him sitting around in the hotel there talking about that, and I hope you enjoy it. Away we go.
Check, check. Microphone check. One, two.
Breaker, all right. Breaker. So how was last night?
It's fun. Stayed out a little bit too late, but, you know, that's kind of how we do when you travel.
Well, see, my drinking days are over. Like, I'm one of those guys that had to cash in his chips a long time ago because, like, I wouldn't. If I drank last night, I'd still, like, there's no way we could be doing this.
I love it. For me, I've realized that my self-control sucks. So my methodology is pretty simple. I wake up in the morning and I put 2 Advil, my backup phone, and a bottle of water next to my nightstand and set my alarm for the next day before I leave my hotel room. So because I know that I won't be that smart at night, and I don't know if maybe I'll go out tonight, maybe I won't go out. So every single time before I leave the hotel room in the morning, I plan for the wake-up call the next morning.
Right.
That's so I because I don't have self-control.
No, that's, I think that's called, I don't know what that's called, but it's called something.
It's planning for the fact that you realize that you can't say no or know not how to close. I've gone out 3 nights here and closed down the bar at the hotel all 3 nights.
Right.
So like I realized that, like,
but that's not good on the wallet or the liver.
Well, last night there was free drinks, so that was really good on the wallet. Free drinks I will take. Yes, the liver stuff. Actually, it's funny. People ask me, well, how much, you know, because when I'm home, I'm not home very often. They're like, well, when you're home, like, you know, do you sit down and have a beer? I'm like, I don't drink when I'm home. I was like, because I live on the speaker circuit, which means going out with conference people every single week where I have to give my liver a break on
right.
the weekends.
So how many weeks are you actually on the road? Like 2018, what does 2018 look like in terms of number of weeks?
So I would say number of gigs, I'm going to be close to 60.
Okay.
But some of that is, you know, like I had 2 weeks this year already that it was a 6-gig week in a 3-day span. So, you know, bouncing around. But I would say of like total weeks, because no one puts conferences on like 4th of July week or like the big holiday week. So of the
Christmas week, et cetera.
So I'd say 7 weeks are off limits. And I would say that kind of knocks it down 45. I'm on the road probably 38 weeks of the year. But the nice thing is I used to go on the road and train a class that was 4 days, and I had to come in a day early and leave a day late. So it was like a 6-day traveling gig, and I did that for 5 years.
But how are you doing the multiple in a week thing? Because I know you said you don't just do the Gary Vee thing. You actually like to stick around and mingle and
right.
learn.
Most of that is when an event doesn't have anything more, right? So like if it's, I go for an event that only has a 4-hour day, right? So like I'll be like, hey, you know, I'm in town. I'm going to Newcastle. I'm flying on Friday to England from here. And so Monday I'm doing a gig for them because it's Newcastle Startup Week. And then Tuesday I'm going to 3 different places that are only putting an event on for me. So I'm the only speaker. So it's not like I even, like, there's not like hanging out afterwards because I'm speaking with a brand. I do a lot now. I'd say 50% are brand gigs and 50% are industry sample.
And are you in any sort of bureaus, or is it all you smiling and dialing? Or
actually,
the rings,
not even
or
smiling and dialing.
They're
all coming
in
me. I was building a community since 2012. 85% are inbound from people that, funny enough, my podcast is my number one lead generator for speaking, because I'll get emails of people. Excuse me. I'll get emails from people that will simply say, Brian, I've never heard of you. Someone suggested your podcast. I listened to this episode. I would like you to keynote my event with this podcast episode. So I actually started labeling my podcast episodes keynote type titles because people will hire me based on a podcast episode.
What are your topics this weekend or this week?
So this week it's putting the social back in social media.
Right.
And then how to discover the girl or boy next door from influencer marketing perspective. So micro influencers, like the real influencers, where Matthew McConaughey might, you know, put a Lincoln on the TV, but we all know Matthew McConaughey doesn't drive a Lincoln. But someone that's on YouTube that test drives,
he might. Comfy in that thing.
He does look like he's comfy. But you know, but someone that, you know, does 200 reviews of cars on YouTube can drive a lot of numbers on YouTube. So or a lot of numbers on cars. Because think about it, are you going to trust Matthew McConaughey to give you advice on what car to drive, or are you going to trust a YouTuber that looks like you, that can relate to you, you know, has kids, has a family? And so for me, that's what I'm talking about. A lot of it's like, hey, this new influencer doesn't have to be a celebrity. It can literally be a YouTuber that has 5,000 views.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. I mean, this term, this is a term that gets thrown a lot thrown around a lot.
Are you sure you didn't drink last night?
Influencer marketing. I'm not big of an editor on these.
Yep.
I mean, do you? There's an acceptable level of audio that we've all sort of like that. It's not 2008. You can put out a pretty good podcast with just this guy.
Yep, for sure.
Right. And I've just found that it's interesting. I mean, I'm curious your thoughts on this. When I started this in this obstacle racing world, and my kids would walk in and ask for a French fry, people loved that.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, wow. Now, it's funny because I've read two reviews back to back on my show where one guy's like, I don't give a fuck about your kids, right? And I'm like, that's okay. Like, you can either not listen or fast forward through, right? But more often than not, it's like, give us more of that. Give us more of that.
Yep.
And it's,
I like that.
But isn't that kind of fascinating that it's like people are so, you know, it's 2 seconds of my kid asking a French guy and me going, get out of here, River, or whatever.
Well, so, you know, on stage, part of what I was talking about is this, like, I think every business is in the business of trust, and we don't believe anybody's perfect. So the fact that you're a podcast, that people for a while in podcasting, you had to portray that you had perfect audio and you never said an you never had a dramatic pause, you didn't have anybody interrupt you. No one believed that was perfect, right? We all kind of knew that there was a facade. And now we're like, I would rather, like, for my podcast, I do very little editing as well. Like, if I didn't have a sponsor right now, I probably wouldn't edit any of the audio that I'm actually capturing for my podcast, other than, you know, just cleaning it up, you know, from a levels perspective. But for me, I'm amazed now that raw aspect is what people crave. I told you I record mine on Facebook Live, and the amount of times that, like, random things happen, like I had my tripod fall on top of me while I was recording a podcast. It's one of my most popular video episodes and one of my most popular podcast episodes, and it's because people like that raw authenticity.
So I've seen you, like, sort of fired up. How many things are going at once, typically?
Yeah, so I stream to 4 locations, so YouTube Live, Periscope, my website, and then Facebook Live. I have 3 monitors up, and I'm recording it, you know, directly myself. So I have the podcast mic in front of me. Just use a web camera, you know, directly at me. But yeah, I'm pushing it out 4 different places at once.
So I kind of bailed on Periscope, kind of when everybody came on and bailed on Periscope.
Yeah, there's a whole group of people that bailed on it. I'm still riding the Periscope train
because
it uses Twitter, and because it pushes out the Twitter, you get the audience that doesn't know you, doesn't like you, but all of a sudden searched for your topic. And so I get a lot of organically, I'd say, random people that stumble onto my content via Periscope, where Facebook Live, you have to be following my page or be a friend of mine to find my Facebook Live. So it's very limiting on the new listener. And I'm a big believer in, like, how do I reach people that have no idea who I am? Well, I need to be on the channels that people are searching, right? So, like, even LinkedIn, I put a 5-minute video clip of my podcast on LinkedIn, and I know, like, it's hard to track the exact numbers of subscribers from there, but I can probably guarantee that I'm probably educated, probably bringing on 50 to 60 new listeners every time I put a video on LinkedIn.
What are you being searched for? Other than a friend just goes, this guy's great, use him. What are you being searched for, and what do you want to be searched?
So for me, you know, like, my tagline is I translate the geek speak, right? So I want to take...
I thought you were press the damn
press
button.
Press the button. Well, I have lots of taglines. You know, think like a fan. You know, I'm a marketer. I talk in tweetables, right? So, like, that's a peak. But for me being discovered, mainly I want people to realize that I help people embrace change, right? So any topics from, like, digital marketing to social media to technology. I mean, I've done podcasts where I do blockchain discussions or artificial intelligence discussions. The new show I'm working on that will be launching in the summer that I kind of teased you earlier is the Anti-Niche Show. And it's the idea where I don't have a niche because I literally can talk about everything under the sun. I love sports. I'm a Pittsburgh sports fan. And so the fact that I have that ability, it makes it a little harder for me. What do I want to be discovered for? But the nice thing is, like, I'm speaking at an event in 2 weeks, and they wanted a podcast episode. They literally said in the thing, we're going to pay you to go on stage and talk about episode 23 of the FOMO Fans podcast. And I was like, really? Like, you're going to pay me to go do that? Yes, please. So, like, I've almost SEO'd my podcast titles to sound like a keynote.
But that's not, I'm guessing, but you've kind of, like, come across that, like, by accident or whatever.
By accident. Right.
So
dumb
what,
luck.
So what were you wanting to be searched for, or what?
I'd say, you know, digital disruptor, I guess, was kind of like the, like, because, you know, like, I'm a millennial. I'm, like, the token millennial a lot of times, which I'm perfectly fine with. I wear being a millennial as a badge of honor. I don't hide it from it at all. But
you are wearing a "You're Killing Me Smalls" shirt.
I am,
which is, dare I say, the battle cry of millennials.
It is. It is. It is truly a battle cry.
I had an employee about 10 years ago say that to me, and I had seen the movie. I saw it in the theater. Okay, and she said it to me, and I was like, "What?" And she was like, "You don't know you're killing me, Smalls?" And like she was like horrified.
Oh, wow.
It was like I was her grandfather. Anyhow. Go ahead.
You're like, we're going to remove your millennial card. You can no longer hang out with the millennials.
Well, no, I'm like, I've said this a bunch of times. Like at one point, when I had somebody working for me and I couldn't figure out how to get like a CD to my iTunes and she was showing me, and I literally thought I was the guy that people said, "How do you program this VCR?"
Right. Okay.
Like literally.
Okay.
And like, I'm like, how did this happen?
How did I get passed up? How did it go around me real quick? Like, where did I miss the boat?
And now, literally, not a joke, Emma, okay, 10-year-old when she was probably 9,
yep.
I was trying to get something up on iMovie, and clearly I know how to use iMovie.
Right.
I can't remember what it was, but I was like, "Can you?" And it was like, it was out of my hands, back in my hands. She had edited, added a graphic. It was like, it's unbelievable.
It is,
dude.
Unbelievable. And it's that born on device mentality. Like my daughter's, my oldest is 8, and she looks at the Apple TV as the dumbest thing ever because she's like, "Why do I need a remote? Why can I not swipe the icons that are on the Apple TV?" Because she swipes on an iPad, you swipe on an iPhone, and she looked at me the one day and she goes, "I have to go over and get that little piece of plastic to control the big thing on the TV." I'm like, "Yes, you do." Like that's where we live at the world. Like for them, the remote control just makes it's like kind of like a mouse. Why do I need a mouse? Everything should be touchscreen.
Right. You know,
it's like, wow. Where do we go from there? Like, I remember the idea that like the fact that the remote was an all-in-one remote and we didn't need 30 remotes was like was breaking news. Now they don't even want that. They want voice activation, and it's crazy.
Now she's how old?
8.
Does she watch YouTubers?
She loves YouTubers.
Right.
It's amazing how quickly that kind of comes on. And I like the cooking and baking kids shows. Oh my goodness. Like they are addicted.
My daughter's got the slime thing.
Oh yeah, slime. It's taking over the world. Slime making is now like it's my kids. That's all they talk about.
And where are you on like having the kids on social media thing?
So it's a good question because I live a very public life on social. Going through my divorce was a interesting time for me to kind of figure out that because my ex is a school teacher and she isn't on social media very much because of a school teacher. But my kids have been a part of my social. They've been on my slides on stage for a while. You know, I'm a big believer in kind of giving them room to be themselves, but policing it from a higher level. Like for me, like I talk about my kids everywhere on social, but I have a Google Alerts with an if this then that statement that if anybody tweets the words bomb, lockdown, or raid in the school where my daughter's school is, I get an email push notification immediately. So I put things out there, but I also have things that are in place that allow me to kind of monitor or police in my own way. So it's an interesting
piece. When I put this out now, the FBI is going to get an alert that you just said those 3 words
yes,
on my show.
You're welcome. Yeah, it's now it's going to be like, wait, why are we scanning that podcast?
What's that thing people were doing to each other? The gamer thing that they were doing? Oh, dude, right. I know you got to know this. People were calling the FBI and saying there's...
Oh, yes, for people's houses?
Right.
Horrible.
I know.
Didn't they get killed? Someone got killed?
Well, it's just, it's fucking resources.
Yes, no kidding.
There's a term for it, though. You got another term.
Here's
by the way, we're going to go all over the place like this.
I like going all over the place.
Good.
That's hence the anti-niche.
I mean, listen, when I have people on, my goal is to like, let's not do the story you've told 1,000 times.
Which I like.
Right?
Yeah, this discussion already is probably one of the most fun I've had, and I've done a lot of podcast interviews,
good.
I appreciate that.
My daughter started loving YouTube videos, and she started making, and it's interesting because she may hear this one day, but certainly not right now. So she's just turned 11, and so she does videos, and it's very... like, let's just call it basic bitch kind of stuff. And it's not her. And she's funnier in real life. Like,
oh, interesting.
Like her wit and her whatever. But she's trying to be like, "Hey, guys," like that thing. And I said to my wife, I'm like, she's kind of being phony. And my wife's like, no. You got to let her discover that.
Right.
Like, that's part of, like, don't.
Well, that's good, though. I'm glad your wife.
No, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree completely. And I think also it's like that coming into your own. Like, because it is a light bulb. Like, even like doing things ad hoc, you have to have a self-awareness to be able to do this. Right. Like because the idea is, okay, I'm going to do a podcast or I'm going to do a video and I'm going to do it just like everybody else, right? And then you realize, like, doing it just like everybody else turns you into the exhaust of everybody else. And how do you stand out? You have to find your own way. So I love that you're letting her find her own way because that's
an exciting... Well, thank my wife for that, because I'd be the crazy controlling dad otherwise. But here's what I've found. Because I follow people like Gary Vee, my... shit is flooded with people who want to be keynote speakers, people who want to teach me how to market, and I cannot get over how much garbage is out there.
Selling unicorns and rainbows is like a industry profession.
Well, the thing now is the train the trainers.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Do you have a real estate business? Do you have a blah, blah business? Do you have a fitness business? And I'm like, who's giving these people money? Because like, I probably know a little bit more about social than that guy.
Right.
Maybe a lot more.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. Does it bother you as much as it bothers me?
It bothers the which Instagram is my favorite channel now, and the main reason that is because marketers can't ruin it like everything else they
Fake,
do.
I don't know,
they try. They try. But like at least there, you only get one link out, and it's not near as like kind of painful. You know, like my Facebook feed, I mean, the amount of people I had to unfollow in the marketing space because it was like, oh my God, you're selling me everything. And like, you know, the amount of people that will launch, let's say, a podcast, and 2 months after launching that podcast, they will now have podcasttraining.com.
Right.
And you're like, wait a second. Like, what gave you not only the permission or the right, but like, why all of a sudden now can you teach everybody something? But I used to get mad at them. Now I'm getting mad at the people that are paying me, right? Like, I've switched my anger towards like stupid people are gonna do stupid things, and you can't stop stupid from happening. And, like, I even said that on stage. I was like, you can't fix stupid, but like the fact that people are still throwing money at people without like doing a little bit of research to find out if they're credible resource. Like, it's hard to get mad at people like in the real estate business that have been scammed when you're like, did you Google their name? Did you realize they've never like had a successful, you know, testimonial on their website? Like, maybe you shouldn't be giving them money.
Do you watch American Greed?
Oh yes,
I love American Greed.
Awesome.
So now that I think about it, you're a hotel guy. So yep. So like American Greed, Law and Order SVU, these things you can count on.
Yes.
Right. So it's always my wife and I love it. And it's the same thing because it's always like, he was the sweetest man.
Yes. Yeah. Like, and they build you up nicely for that, right? Like the average human, and then all of a sudden, goodbye.
Right. But like, that's what, like, the neighbors say. It's like, well, all my trusted him and gave him all this money.
We had no idea. None of us had an idea that it would ever happen. But, yeah, you know, like, I think that's also, like, this idea where we're living in a world where a lot of people, to Gary, I'm a big Gary Vee fan, right? Like,
right.
But, like, a lot of people are looking for the shortcut in life. And Gary does not take a shortcut. Gary, to me, is one of the hardest working people in the world. But too many people just hear that word hustle, and they just like, well, if I work really hard, I'm going to be successful. And I'm like, no. If you work smart, you have something to actually sell or do, and you're worth something, then you'll be successful. But not just working. Anyone, any idiot can work hard and hustle for no reason, right? And I think that's an unfortunate byproduct, because I think if you really listen and to understand Gary, the dude works his tail. I mean, like, I look at him as someone that, like, I don't have the same success metrics as him. Like, I don't want to own the Jets. I would own the Steelers anyhow. But I don't want to own the biggest building in New York. But because I know that's his mission, I mean, I commend his hustle. Every time I see him on Snapchat, he's in another airport or, you know, flying all over the place. It's amazing.
Have you met any of the Rooneys?
So I've met once. So my family's had season tickets to the Steelers since 69. But we did, it was right after I graduated high school. So it was like 99 or 2000. We were walking actually to the stadium, and the Rooneys came out of the house and walked with us, like literally walked down the path to, and it was Three Rivers at the time, not Heinz Field, but yeah, it was pretty cool.
Well, so, but have you like thought like, how can I work with this organization?
So weirdly, you know, it's kind of like betting on my team. I don't bet on Pittsburgh sports because I care so much already that I don't need to add something to it. I'm also very afraid of working with someone like the Steelers or the Penguins or something that I care so much about that I would like all of a sudden, you know, like when you hear people like, oh, I worked at my favorite restaurant, but then I would never go eat at that restaurant again because I know how the sausage is made. I haven't, but I would, I've done some work from influencer work for the Penguins. Like, so I'll let them know when I'm coming to a game, and they'll kind of stay some things for me to be on the big screen, or where I'll do some fun stuff. But I haven't done anything yet. But you know, if they're listening, I'm always open to the possibility of collaborating with, you know, anyone in Pittsburgh.
Well, no, but I would think, you know, or even just in your travels, like, you know, you were speaking on the same thing as Lynn Swann, or I mean, I don't know if that kind of stuff happens.
It does. It does. And, you know, like, I mean, it just like the randomness of industries and people. You know, and I get to speak at such random things. I talked about it on stage, but the last time I spoke in Atlanta was at an event called Barkled. Like Bark.
A dog?
It was a dog influencer event. There was actually more dogs in the audience than there were people.
I just dropped my phone, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, describe where we are. I always like to give people a nice little contextual.
So yeah, we're in this beautiful, this Atlanta airport. We're in the airport. You can tell that I was out drinking last night. You know, this Atlanta hotel. We're at the Marriott Marquis, and we are in the lobby outside, right outside actually, like the main event here for Social Shakeup. And, you know, there's 750 social media marketers running around, and we're just kind of sitting out by the elevator shaft.
We have been sneakily photographed by two people in the last few minutes. I don't know if you noticed that or not.
I have noticed.
It just happens that you're such the regular that you don't even blink.
I, it's one of those things where you become really good at being candid when you know, like, off the corner of your eye.
I knew the candid thing was happening, and when I turned, he took one. I'm like, oh, he doesn't use that one because that's not the good one to use.
Right. But yeah, that's why I let them, you know, it's like letting creatives be the right ones. Like, if they end up using that one, apparently they needed that one for another
reason. So the Gary Vee thing, right? I believe just what I would call the Gary Vee 101 stuff, right? Because I got turned on to Gary Vee. It's funny. Someone told me to read Crush It like when it came out, and I never did, right? When I had my other business, which I didn't apply anything to. Longer story for another time. And then when I finally read it was when I just had started doing this. And I said, I was doing that stuff not even knowing it, like just putting out the content, interacting with the community, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, Gary is a lot of the same story, right?
Yep, for sure.
How many times can I see Gary on his way to the airport?
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
But I like to listen to Gary to get reminded that I'm doing the right thing, which is because usually if I'm getting hung up in my competition or just worrying about shit I shouldn't worry about, and he's like, just fucking put in the work.
Yep.
Just keep your head down and do what you know is true for you because it's a long game, not a short game.
For sure.
And that's kind of the big sort of like just I kind of lock into those things.
And he gave me advice. In 2013, I was very blessed. I was actually live streaming his South by Southwest keynote, and he gave me 20 minutes, just the two of us kind of talking afterwards. He's like, hey, Brian, I got 20 minutes. Like, you and I, let's have a chat. And I remember it verbatim, but one of the things he had told me is, like, you love change, you love disrupting. You need to have patience, and you need to have a better plan when you're disrupting. And I didn't listen to him. But, like, I tell you what, the next 18 months, I was disrupting for no freaking better reason than I was like, ooh, I that industry bothers me, or the way people are, like, we were talking before, like, you know, marketers selling unicorns and rainbow courses and training and all this the bullshit that's out there, and I just started disrupting for no reason, and it drove me crazy. It burned me out, and then I kind of went back to the same well. I was like, I had to go back to listen to the core of what Gary talks about, and I was like, damn, now I need to take his advice. So, like, you know, I'm wearing a t-shirt on stage with a backwards hat, but I had to build that up, where before I was just like ready to come in and disrupt and break everything. But I think Gary's proof too that, you know, he puts in the work and, you know, has a team around him, but he's also someone that isn't afraid to do something, fail miserably at it, and then just eject and go do something else, which I think is a lesson for all of them.
What has he failed? I mean, he always talks about the Vidler thing. It's like when people ask your mistake, he just points that one thing out. What else has he really done wrong? Because it would help to know.
Well, you know, like he launched like an influencer marketing, which I still think he has, like, as a small company, where he was bringing in influencers that were Viners and YouTubers and signing them onto his kind of label or his kind of influencer gig. But I think the hard part with that was, like, because he's so well connected, having people that are exclusive under his brand wasn't, you know, you end up being like the exhaust of Gary Vee. Like, I don't know what influencer wants to sign up to be kind of like the second tier below him, because he is so good and so loud. So I would say,
but if you can't afford Gary Vee, then you can afford one of his guys, maybe.
That was his methodology, but the people he was signing, at least from my outside in, were people that were almost on the same level as him. So, like, if you can't afford Gary, you can't afford the two other guys that are on his roster. Like, there wasn't like that second tier. But, and, you know, and even things like, you know, Gary, I mean, I on my podcast, I had Gary on from, like, we were at an event, and he told me, go all in with Snapchat. Facebook will not disrupt Snapchat. Like, go all in. And, of course, if we look at that fast forward, Gary barely does a little bit of Snapchat now. Still uses it, but, you know, Instagram has completely taken over from a brand perspective with what Snapchat was doing. And I wouldn't say that was bad advice at the time. And, you know, I knew he was an investor in Snapchat as well. But I think it's an interesting, you got to take stabs and not be afraid to admit when you do something wrong, but also be bold with a statement.
All right. So I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
That's selfish about my own needs, but because I also believe people can benefit from it. So
yes.
Here I am doing my thing, right? So yep. I've built an audience in this niche thing. And I was going all in on Snap because Gary said it every day until he was blue in the face, and I found it was working.
Yep.
And everybody I talked to said, I'm not a kid. I don't send dick pics. Why are you on it? And I'd be like, just give them the Heisman. Like, fine, do whatever you want.
Yep.
And then I started moving. And then when Instagram did its thing, I was like, this seems kind of a lot easier. I already have an audience over here. Let me move over to Insta. But I barely touch Twitter, right?
Okay.
For example.
Yep.
And I just feel like I'm moving as fast as I can, just trying to pump out blog, video, podcast, right?
Right.
And those are mostly my, and I do have, you know, it's a news site, other bloggers, like people who write stuff, but I am the sort of the voice.
Right.
And I just, someone like me who says, dude, I just, how can I possibly go all in on Twitter, go all in on Facebook? Like, how can I try to keep up with all these channels?
So, I think automation is your friend. You know, the reason automation gets a bad name is because there's bad people using the automation, right? Like, it's idiots programming something that's like,
and they,
spamming and like.
They try to do the same thing across multiple platforms when they're different languages.
Right. And not only different languages, different formats, different, you know, developments. But I think one of the things you also have to think about is, how can I automate certain things, like pushing out of blogs onto Twitter, so that when I do have little, and I call it pockets of time, I can spend that time engaging, right? I think the problem with a lot of these channels is that if you're spending all of your time putting content on the channels, you don't spend near as much time engaging or consuming on the channel. Like, you would be amazed how many Instagram stories I watch. I watch a shit ton
of
Instagram
stories. Do you comment
or hearts? Comment hearts, reply. But for me, it's part of that, like, you know, I spend a lot of time there, but I can tell you, like, I schedule a lot of my tweets that are put out. Every Monday, I spend about 30 minutes scheduling content going out on all these other channels over the next like 5 or 6 days. So for me, you make automation your friend, but you also have to be, I would rather someone go all in and continue going all in on one or two of the channels than doing it half-assed across five. Like, I still think that is the wrong way of doing it. I also believe, like, for me, I'm on all the channels because that's what I get paid to do. Like, people ask me all the time, like, Brian, how are you on all these channels? Like, well, I'm giving advice on Twitter. I'm giving advice on podcasting, getting advice on live video. But if I wasn't doing all that, I probably would kind of cycle myself down to two or three channels. But I tell you what, Twitter's one that for my podcasters, small business owners, Twitter's value in people searching and kind of stumbling across you without knowing who you are is so powerful. Think about it. Think about everyone that goes to a marathon, half marathon, or a run, or the zombie chase. That they're tweeting out pictures with a hashtag, right? Like a marathon runner, or like, I just used the hashtag the other day where I love marathons, but I love Netflix marathons. Like, right, and the amount of people that all started following me that were marathon runners on Twitter, like, was insane. And I was like, wait, where did they come? Oh, they came from it because I hashtagged marathons on Twitter.
Now, but are those like real followers that are going to stick around and pay attention, or it doesn't really matter? Some will, some won't.
Some will, some won't. Maybe they click on my website and they go, ooh, I don't want to follow him on Twitter, but he has a podcast, right? Like, for me, and this is one of the things that I look at it a lot, is I want people to decide where they consume my content. I don't care. You don't need to follow me on every channel. Wherever you prefer to consume my type of content, business advice, you know, passion, motivation type stuff, do it there. So, like, people always tell me, like, well, Brian, now you're podcast is cannibalizing your live video audience. I'm like, no, I don't care that I take someone from a live video to a podcast or vice versa. I care more about that person staying for the long time, right? Because if they would prefer to listen to me on podcast, they have that option now, but I give that to the audience.
So you fires up and do it live. If someone's like me that does it, like, I talk to someone at a race, or like, we'll do a Skype later.
Yep.
Do you think, because I've heard kind of both sides on this, like, just throwing it on YouTube for the heck of it as audio only with a couple pictures, is that smart, not smart? People might search it and find it that way.
I mean,
waste of time, not waste of time.
YouTube's the second largest search engine, owned by the first largest search engine, right? Google owns YouTube.
Is there something that starts or ends at 10:30?
I don't know. Yeah, all of a sudden,
it just became a lie.
It did. Like, everyone kind of left their rooms, which is kind of fun. We got the DJ playing in the background, so it's an interesting. I think I think there is value there. I'm a big believer in, you don't know until you try it, right? So, like, you know, for me, what I started to find out was, I was taking my live video and pushing it onto YouTube, the full 45-minute podcast. That was not working on YouTube. But what I figured out was, if I take my favorite 5-minute segment, I don't edit for like 5 minutes worth of clips. I just take a 5-minute, you know, like, I keep it simple, stupid, and a lot of shit that I do.
Right.
But I took that my best 5 minutes and I put it on there. And my call to action at the end, if you want to listen to the whole episode, search for FOMO Fans in your podcasting app. To me, I get more views and more comments on that video than the 45-minute video of the whole show on YouTube. So you have to kind of, like, I play with it and see what works, and then kind of.
You know what I found
is
interesting? You can put almost any 30-second clip on like an Instagram story, and it sounds interesting.
It does.
Like, I used to think I had to find like the perfect one, and they're just like this, you know, like, let me search, and the person goes blah 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 restaurants. Like, there we go.
Yo, boom.
That's the quote.
That's it.
For more, come to this.
Yep. And it's amazing.
So you don't even say, you don't even give them a literal like link, or you just say, just search FOMO Fans.
Yep.
Because you don't think they're gonna bother to remember
or click on the link, or even having a short URL. Like, I use I'm a geek on that side. It's like itunes.fomofans.live. You use that URL, it goes to my iTunes for my podcast, right?
Right, right?
But giving someone that makes them have to remember something that they probably aren't. They're like, oh god, I'll come back to it. But if I'm like, hey, go search FOMO Fans, like, oh yeah, and like they'll type it in their notes section on their phone. Like, I'm also kind of a lover of trying, if everybody's pushing out links or sign up for my email newsletter, I will refuse to do that. Because I'm like, if you're getting bombarded with 400 email newsletter requests, the 401st one, you're not going to remember, right? So for me, it's like, don't sign up for that. Follow me on Facebook and send me a Facebook message. And they're like, wait, you just told me to send you a Facebook message? I'm like, yeah, send me a Facebook message on Messenger. And like, that blows people's mind, but they remember me versus me telling them the same, you know, I'm just 401st person that said, give me your email address.
Yeah, I kind of got away from asking for reviews for a while just because I was just tired of people asking for it.
Me too.
And it doesn't really help anyway.
It doesn't. It's
an ego filler.
It's such an ego filler.
Right?
Like I got the push notification yesterday that I got two new testimonials on my podcast on iTunes, right? And I was laughing because I was like, man, I used to like celebrate the living shit out of
right.
that. And now I realize like, hey, I would rather someone like tell me they subscribed than to send me that testimonial at this point, because you're right, it's an ego filler, but it's also one of those things where, you know, I appreciate the effort more so than anything else. Like I mean, I give out, you know, for me, when someone does something like that without me having to ask, I give out swag.
Absolutely.
Send them books, because to me, that's like the ultimate compliment, but you're right, it is definitely an ego filler.
So I'm in a position in my race world where I can get stuff. I can get free races and et cetera, et cetera. And I always give to the people that don't ask. Yep. I always give to the person that just like sends a nice note or a retweet. I'm like, you know what, you're going to, and they're like, I don't need it. I'm like, no, that's fine. Let me help you, because you're not constantly asking me for stuff.
Well, continue doing that, because we need more of that in the world, right? I think there's still an audience that feels like that manufactured engagement that like to me, comes off so pushy. You know, and podcasters do it too. Podcasters, the amount of call to actions that you are putting on your listeners is overwhelming a lot of times, right? And like, wouldn't you rather do one call to action over a 3-episode segment, you know, section where that inspires, you've inspired someone, or do no call to action and you inspire someone so much that they beg for more, right? Like, one of my favorite things is, you know, people will come to me and I'll come off stage and they're like, Brian, like, the best compliment I can get is, say, Brian, you're the exact same person on stage as you are off stage, right? Like, that's my number one compliment. But they'll also be like, wait, where can I go to get more?
Right.
And I'm like, I was so good that not only at that moment did you enjoy it, but you want more of me? Like, that's a massive right. compliment.
Well, but here's the thing, is like trying to I forget not everybody's like us.
Right.
Like, they're just sitting at home consuming and loving or hating, and they'll never fucking tell you anything.
Right, very much. And I mean, we are a massive passive audience, right? But we've trained that, because for TV listeners, like even for TV shows, for the longest time, TV shows weren't on, you know, on social media. Like, I mean, I'm a Sons of Anarchy diehard fan. Sons of Anarchy crushed social media by simply using a hashtag and letting their people that were on the show post on Twitter, right? And it was like, but you still have to get a viewer of the TV show to go do social media. Now, when I sit around and watch the Super Bowl, I'm looking at my phone more than I'm even looking at the Super Bowl, which is kind
of
crazy.
Now, are you like a laptop watcher of shows, or you only watch the screen at home?
I'm a screen. I'm still, you know, put it on the TV. You know, like,
me too, dude.
I love Netflix. I will grind the living hell out of some Netflix shows. But I'm still a TV person. You know, I have an Apple TV that I syndicate all my stuff. Yeah, I'm the same way.
It's funny, because I again, that same employee that worked for me, she was like, you know, I just sit in my little kitchen nook. You know, she's 25 years old, and I watch shows while I eat, and I'm just like, I can watch maybe like a 6-minute, like, here's what happened in the basketball game last night.
Right.
But I I'm going to sit down and watch a show.
Yeah, and for me, I'm still in that world. Like, even if it's HD, like, in my bedroom, I don't have a TV in my bedroom at the moment. And so, like, I have an iPad Pro that I'm like, okay, I'll just watch the Netflix there. But my attention span is not, I cannot watch more than one episode. If I want to watch the second episode, I go back into the living room and sit in front of the TV. Like, I think it's like just the way we're kind of trained.
Now, obviously, when you're traveling, it's all crazy. You go out and do whatever. When you're at home, is there a time that you turn notifications off, or that you turn airplane on?
My daughters call it airplane time with daddy. So, like, I put my phone in airplane mode.
Right.
But that's only with my daughter. I truly enjoy being connected all the time.
Like, you want to be woken up to notifications?
Really? I do. Isn't that weird?
And how old are you now?
I'm 36. Right. So yeah, I know.
We're gonna talk again in 10 years. Yeah, I know we'll both be still around.
Yeah, I'll be burnt out by. But yeah, it's that weird element of I haven't got tired of it yet. There might be a time that I will. I will say that, like, sometimes, like, I like sports, right? Like, I'm going wakeboarding, or I was snowboarding, and I was laughing. I was like, my phone had frozen, had locked locked up because it was cold. And like, I realized I just spent 2 hours without looking at my phone, and I felt free, right? Like,
it's a big one.
But you know, but I also, you know, like one of the things, like, and this is great for, you know, like I work with the paintball industry, and they were finding out they were serving their audience, and paintball, a lot of people that are under the age of 30 that are going back into paintballing, one of their reasons is because they know that's a 3 hour time that they're not looking at their phone. They're like, it gives me a way, but I'm like, but why'd you pick this paintball park? They're like, well, because there's a good place to get posts for Instagram.
No, of course.
Like, so they're going there to post it on Instagram, but they're being inspired by the fact that they don't even have to, you know, it's forced disconnection from social media, because when they're out on the paintball course, they're not looking at their phone.
Because why do anything if you can't post about it on social?
Why? I mean, like, if you can't post it on social, it didn't happen. I mean, the amount of people that are taking pictures of us doing here, like, I love social media events because it's like a byproduct of everything that you do. Like, people at social media events are really good at documenting the world and putting it on social media.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, it's funny because I was at a race with my kids, and a lot of people come up to me, and at one point my daughter was like, "Are you famous?" And it's like, it's like that thing, we're all famous to a few people.
Yep.
I go, honey, to these people,
yep,
it's awesome. Step outside of here, I'm not, which is fine
it
with
is.
Me.
Hey, being and being popular in a small fishbowl of people that you care about is
right.
Way better. I always feel like the celebrities that can't even go to their favorite restaurant because they get bombarded, like, I feel for them, because like, being popular with people that you care about is really cool, but being popular with people that just bother the living shit out of you, I wouldn't welcome that on anybody.
Right. Well, especially now when, like before it was like, should I come up and ask that person for an autograph? Whereas now those people can't, like, without, like,
yep,
10,000. I totally was going to ask you something, another selfish question that I think would benefit other people about in the content space. Oh man, I totally lost it. I hate when that happens. What is the first thing you check when you wake up?
Instagram. Oh. Crazy. Instagram stories is the first thing I check. I love Instagram. Not the Instagram feed, like Instagram stories.
Do you, since you like to go out and have a good time, do you wake up and delete anything?
I don't. I will fully admit, it's this transparently, I woke up this morning knowing what I did last night and having that little bit of like fuzzy memory, and I went to my phone and was like, please tell me I didn't go live on my Facebook page. And I open Facebook, I'm like, please tell me I'm not, oh, thank God I did not go live. Now, good question though, is would I delete it if I had gone live? You know what? I'm pretty good at, I can have a rule. If I don't want my mom to see it, I don't post it on social media. I'm a mama's boy, and that's my rule. And so, like, I'm usually really good. Like, if I'm drinking too much, I'm like, all right, this is where Brian is done doing Instagram stories. There was kind of a joke that, like, I at one point of a night, I would go from Instagram stories to Snapchat because Snapchat was a little bit more raw of me. But I don't delete. So, yeah, at this point.
And it's interesting because it still feels that way, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, it
does. Snapchat still feel more, quote-unquote, secret?
It does. It does.
Less public?
But... It does. But I also think, well, one of the things with Snapchat that's interesting is it's so hard to build a following there that I thought that was a great thing, right?
Right.
Because I thought, like
the smart people, only the people hustling can figure it out.
But at the same time, having to educate people on like how to follow me on Snapchat and then the interface of Snapchat was so tiring that I was like, I gotta be done.
So here's the question, okay? And this is like, again, like to me, it's like, so in my world, I'm trying to sell people, if you look, like maybe basic media kit is, hey, we're going to get you across all these platforms, right? And here's how we're going to grow you organically,
right?
Right? We're going to let people, just like you were doing with Bone Frog or whatever,
yep,
right? And so they're like, yeah, but I get this back from Facebook, right? Because Facebook has trained them to think this mythological immediate ORI, the one that, you know, again, Gary Vee 101, what's the ORI with your grandmother?
Right.
Is trying to teach that to someone. Like, I'm like, in order to sell you, I have to educate you for 20 minutes.
You do.
And even then, you're like, or our industry specifically is discount crazy.
Yep.
So people are always...
Right, well, you can blame Groupon for that, right? Like, Groupon really ruined that for...
Right, but my specific industry, and there's my main competitor, like... My main competitor doesn't even charge for advertising. They go, we'll just do the affiliate thing. And so someone sees a direct thing. Well, I got 100 from them, and I only got 4 from you. Why should I give you any money?
Oh wow, that's an interesting animal to have to kind of compete with, because you're competing with free, which is like a really miserable.
Right.
That's a miserable time. You know, and I also think there's an element where people forget like the evergreen longevity of content, right? So like, yes, I got you 4 people in the same 30 days that you got, someone else got 100, but my content's going to sit around. Like, there's a sponsor for my podcast. They sponsored 3 months of my podcast when it launched 2 years ago. And they kind of were at the point at the end of the 3 months, they're like, we're not seeing like the numbers that we wanted click through that
right.
We're kind of done. And about a year later, almost like a year to the day later, they came to me and like, We just signed two of our biggest clients that happened to go back and listen to podcast episode 8 that you had, you know, you talked about our thing. They're like, they told me, you should have sold us better on the longevity of the content. And I'm like, well, I thought I was, and I thought going into a partnership, but for them, they had to learn that, right? And it's a lesson that, I mean, I get paid oftentimes to speak at an event by a sponsor or a tool, and the only reason I'm up there is to train people on a mindset on influencer marketing so that the people selling influencer marketing technology can go in without spending 20 minutes educating, right? So like I end up being the third party educator, and then they can come in and actually sell a tool. And I think it's kind of the world we're living in too, where everyone feels that they can have access to something or learn something, but we still have to teach, you know, crawl, walk, run.
Are there brands you would not work with?
Yes, lots of them. Many brands that I will not work for, you know, many different reasons, right? I've turned down in the last, okay, so we're, what is this, May of 2018. I've turned down 4 fairly, I would say, recognizable companies that I don't believe my message aligns with very well. That I say, hey, I love who you are. I appreciate, you know, I'm not in a place that I have enough money in the bank that like I should be turning down shit. But the trust that I have with my community is so dialed in that I can't, like, I mean, I had a hotel chain that really wanted to work with me, and I was like, no, I'm so loyal to certain hotel chains that I really love that it would come off so manufactured that if all of a sudden I stayed at this random hotel chain around the United States that people were like, Brian, why are you staying at Motel 6, right? Like, we know that you have certain, and it would become, it would hurt my brand for years that I'd have to turn down those kind of gigs.
You don't think there's a way, I mean, I guess it would depend, but don't you think there is a way to, I don't know, I feel like there's acceptable levels. Like someone comes on, an athlete comes on and goes, hey, listen, I'm being sponsored by this compression brand, and I know that you're thinking, I'm just saying this, but I really do like these pants.
Right.
And I might think, maybe they're just saying that, but I don't hate them for it.
Correct.
No, but now, but if you came along and said, I'm going to start the something that people know you, I'm not going to wear hats anymore,
right?
Because I'm sponsored by Hair Great Clips. That would be bullshit,
right? Correct. So I also think, you know, like there are people that are really good at it, right? One of the things that I've learned with myself from being a self-aware person is that I don't put the same amount of effort into something that doesn't truly align with me. So like I would do them a disservice, right? Like because I agree, and I'm huge for being transparent. And when people say that, I appreciate that, right? Like, and you know, DJ Khalid on Snapchat has random, like he had like a Patron bottle over his shoulder. Yeah, he spent like a year on there bashing Patron tequila because he wasn't a Patron
fan. I thought it was
Khaled. Tomato, tomato.
I had to unfollow, by the way, Khaled. Like one of the few people that I unfollowed on Snapchat.
I had to unfollow him as well. Oh my god.
Hilarious for like a month or two, and
yeah,
then
and
it's,
you're like, oh, I'm done, and like you're done watching it. You're like, I just wasted 20 minutes of my life.
But
I can't
every
get it back.
But every fucking brand in the world is like, how can we get more DJ Khaled?
Which is crazy.
He's still got probably 2 years on that ticking clock.
He does, and you know, and he was just on like Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy Kimmel or one of those, and I was laughing. I'm like, God, man, he just recharged his 15 minutes of fame and running back out there. I mean,
right. So anyways, you were saying about working for brands that don't align with you.
Yeah, so I guess like the part for me is that I go all in everything I do. So if a brand wants to be creative with it, you know, like there is a brand right now, a travel brand that I kind of pushed back on them and said, hey, I would love, it's not a hotel chain, but like a travel agency. I was like, I would love to try my version of content for you. But like, I know what they would want and I wouldn't be willing to put that out there. But you know, it's not for everybody. Like I know some influencers that are like, Brian, I can drink Diet Coke, but if Pepsi comes to me with a good offer, I can be a Pepsi fan. And kudos to them, because if they can pull that off, they can. But for me personally, if it has to align with my brand, like, you know, it has to kind of match me. And if it doesn't, I just don't go all in.
I mean, you seem to be pretty happy-go-lucky and transparent and all that. Like, what does keep you up at night, or what makes you pull your hair out?
I am pretty happy. I wake up happy. I go to bed happy. You know, I stress a lot. The entrepreneur journey sucks. Like, I was like, I worked for a big enterprise company. I worked for a startup. I loved both of those companies, right? I loved working for that. And then I became an entrepreneur for the last 4.5 years. The ups and downs, the gut punches, I hate that. I do love what I do. And so, like, I mean, yesterday I got an email that I got, you know, I put in a proposal to speak at an event that had, you know, inquired for me. They told me there was 20 other speakers there, and they turned me down, right? And I, you know, I had a great day yesterday, crushed the event that I'm speaking at. But, it you know, it hit me where last night before I'm going to bed, I'm like, man, can't believe I didn't get that gig, right? So, but I think what keeps me up at night personally is how do I continue to scale, right? Scale is the thing that really worries me. I also, you know, like I worry about like an industry, to your point earlier, about like people selling unicorns and rainbows and bullshit over and over again. Like I love what I'm doing and I want to be able to set other people up for that success. So a lot of times I consume a lot of content to give people advice for free because I want to continue the ball rolling. I do believe in that mantra of like, you know, the tide rises all ships, but some ships you wish would just, you know, sink. You know, like, and so, but I love what I do. I do have that part. There will probably be a day where I don't love this as much as I once did, but, you know, then I'll figure out something else to do probably.
Do you have any specific sponsors or anything you want to plug? Other than your own stuff?
No. I mean, at the moment, you know, FOMO Fans, the podcast, is my pride and joy. You know, I'm on 73 episodes. I promised my audience I would get 100 no matter what. You know, on episode one, I said, I'm numbering this podcast with three numbers. So my very first episode was 001. And I said, the reason for that is I'm gonna make a promise to you if you make a promise to me. If you're willing to subscribe, I'm willing to give you 100 episodes of content. That show's been a blast. But I can tell you, I'm kind of counting down to 100 because I'm going to launch a new show this summer, which is an interview show, and it'll be interesting what I do with FOMO Fans, and I haven't even brought any new sponsors on the show because I love how it's me, like what you're doing here, like I love being able to do content my way, so no sponsors at the moment, no brands that, you know, shout out to PR News for bringing me to Social Shakeup as a speaker and being able to connect with you because now we got to be on this podcast, you know, in the dirty south, and lots of fun.
All right, dude.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for coming on.
This was fun. I tell you what, this is my favorite type of content where it's ad hoc, good time. So thank you for having me.
Dude, absolutely.
There it was, Brian Fanzo from the Marriott Marquis. Speaking of the Marriott Marquis, guess what's around the frickin' corner, guys? Dragon Con! Unbelievable. It's been another year. Dragon Con last year, my Virgin trip. We had a fun time there. You want to go back and find those episodes? They're available. Go back about, I don't know, say 50 episodes ago because it was a year. And that's coming back around again, and we'll see how this goes this time around. Last year was very sort of catch-as-catch-can. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. We'll see how that one goes. Also, I want to do a couple more shout-outs. I want to continue to spread the love of people that I enjoy. So one is my friend Squishy Puss, who I've been talking about a lot lately.